Welcome to the Talking Biotech Podcast. It's the weekly podcast about agriculture and medicine with an emphasis on biotechnology and some of the good things we can do for people and the planet. My name's Kevin Fult. I'm a professor at the University of Florida, and this week we're going to talk about HIV. And many people don't really remember what HIV is, or at least where it was. This was something that back in the 1980s and 1990s, at least early 90s, was something that was on everybody's mind. And it was all over television shows. Celebrities who were catching HIV, like, you know, Magic Johnson, were front page news. And it was a disease that was on everybody's minds because of its ease of spread through sexual contact, intravenous drug use, and other ways in which it was spread. It was something that was in the minds of everybody as this new and elusive disease was moving through the population. Years later, antiretroviral drugs would really take away a lot of that threat. And people have now been living with HIV for a long time in many cases, but there hasn't been a cure. And today we're going to talk to Dr. Pamela Skinner. She's a professor of biomedical sciences in the Department of Veterinary and Biomedical Sciences at the University of Minnesota. And we'll talk about some of the ways in which biotechnology is being implemented to identify cures for HIV. So welcome to the podcast, Dr. Skinner.
Thanks for having me.
I'm really excited that we're able to talk about this because I want to segue in the next few weeks and months into more of the CAR T based cell therapies and some of the ways that are being used to employ against threats like cancer and viruses. And really, you're the first one of the series. So that I'm really excited about that. So when we look at where we were in the 80s and 90s with HIV, why was this such an impossible virus to completely cure?
Well, HIV is a tough one to tackle because for many reasons. First of all, the virus, it mutates quite readily. And so the surface proteins, the envelope proteins on the surface of the virus, by mutating and the adaptive immune response, for example, the antibodies that are directed against the virus, they can clear that initial virus, but then the virus mutates its surface and produces variants of the envelope proteins and evades those antibody responses continually. So the antibodies can't keep up. And similarly, it's devised tactics to evade the other arm of the adaptive immune system, the CD8 T cell response, by doing something called down modulation of MHC molecules, for example. And it also can mutate to evade the virus-specific T cell responses. So it's very good at hiding from the immune system. And then not only that, the virus also does something. It's a retrovirus, so it incorporates its genome into the host cells. And in some cells, it will produce an infection and lyse the cells, kill the cell, and spread infection. But in other cells, it becomes latent or dormant, and it sits and essentially hides in that cell and remains, and it also is not recognized by the immune system. And every time that cell divides, the daughter cells each maintain the virus. And so for all of these reasons and more, the virus has been very difficult to tackle and cure.
Well, because it's almost like a trifecta of ways of hiding from the immune system. And the retroviral side of this is really very insidious. And I know we haven't talked about the new technologies yet, but doesn't the retroviral nature of this mean that you could never completely cure it until you were able to remove the cells that maintain it?
That's right. And that's really tricky. And we haven't figured out a way to do that yet.
Yeah, so even if we're talking about a cure, we're talking about a cure a little bit in quotes, in that people who have HIV will always potentially test HIV positive, say with if you were to screen genomic DNA, you would be able to find it. But maybe there's ways of shutting it down so it's not expressed, or that the body's surveillance would shut it down when it was expressed.
Yeah, that's right. And so Well, there's still hopes that someday we might get a sterilizing cure. I mean, there really are folks out there working to inactivate those viruses or get them expressed and reversed. But that field's got a long way to go. And so instead of working on a sterilizing cure, most of us in the field are really focused on creating a treatment that would provide sustained HIV remission without the use of antiretroviral drugs.
Well, let's talk about antiviral drugs for a minute. I know that this was a really big breakthrough in the well-being of HIV-positive patients for a long time. It has been for a long time. And I remember back in the 80s and 90s learning about acyclovir and AZT and how they worked and their mechanisms. How are these antiretroviral drugs holding up? And are HIV patients, is this something where you could live an entire life just on the antiretroviral drugs and live pretty much normally?
Yeah, so the antiretroviral drugs have come a long way, and they are very effective at suppressing viral replication. And individuals have now been shown to live for decades without developing HIV/AIDS, the acquired immunodeficiency and associated diseases that kill people. They're able to live relatively normal lives and relatively normal lifespans. However, for some reasons that are not completely unknown, folks that are HIV infected and on antiretroviral therapy for decades tend to be more susceptible to age-related disorders. And it's not really known why, but folks are working on that too.
Yeah, like especially antiretrovirals that maybe are a little bit indiscriminate. Maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but are they still using things like AZT, which, you know, by definition, should have potential collateral effects?
Yeah, I'm not up on the actual drug combinations that are used, but there's several combinations that inhibit several of the protease inhibitors or entry inhibitors, fusion inhibitors, reverse transcriptase inhibitors, and some combination of those is generally put together in a therapy, and they're really good. But you know, I just want to point out though, I want to point out a couple things. One is that these drugs are really effective. And then a new one that's just come out is called PrEP. And PrEP is something that's taken by healthy individuals to prevent infection. So at-risk individuals can take PrEP every day. And recent studies are showing that it's really effective at preventing infection. But even so, even though we have these great drugs and PrEP, there's still 37 million people in the world infected with HIV today. And each year, about 2 million new people get infected. So, and ART's not a cure. ART meaning antiretroviral therapy. Because when folks stop taking their antiretroviral medicine, the virus rapidly comes back disease progresses. So it's not a cure.
Yeah, and it also is very industrialized world centric, because I don't know how well that stuff penetrates into some of the areas of the developing world where HIV is rampant and you don't have necessarily access to the drugs. So, that really also really sets the table for a cure. Do you have any idea on how that breaks down? I mean, are there still really bad infestations happening in places throughout the world?
They are. So Africa has the highest incidence of HIV. And I was recently there visiting in February, and there's some amazing work being done by Bruce Walker's group and Zaza down there. They, for example, like as you mentioned, it's difficult to get these medications out to everyone in all regions and all cultures. And one really innovative means they're using to get these drugs out to folks is they're incorporating the use, they're doing a pilot study with Zulu healers. So out in regions of South Africa, Zulu healers are the traditional medicine people in the area. So people out in the rural areas will go see their Zulu healer for really all of their medical needs and social needs. And so they've taken a group of these healers and they've trained them on doing HIV testing and HIV education, as well as education on PrEP and antiretroviral drugs. So individuals can come in and see their Zulu healer, get tested, instantly know what their response is, and be provided with drugs. And so programs like this, are really going a long way to help reduce HIV. And I must point out, too, down there in those some of those regions of South Africa, 50% of the population were HIV positive years ago, meaning and they're primarily infecting people of childbearing ages, leaving tons of children and old people without caregivers. And now with these really hardworking people who've gone down there to try to help and people who live there who are trying to help, the incidence now has been dropped down to about 30%. So it's not perfect, but you can really see change is happening.
Wow, that's really amazing. It's so cool that you would be able to get a Zulu healer who you would think that, you know, these folks are probably seeing a little threat to their job security if you start bringing in Western medicine. But here's a way in which they're being actually empowered as agents of change, and you see the effects. And, you know, I guess we could do a whole podcast just on that. But since we're talking about biotechnology, and that's our main thrust here, you recently wrote a review that was really nice in explaining at a very approachable level some of the newest therapies that are happening. And what are some of the new therapies that are coming and some of the ways in which you're working to identify ways to solve the problem of HIV?
Well, so there are lots of strategies that are underway that are people taking using biotechnology. So there's groups out like Dr. Paula Cannon and Hans-Peter Kim out on the West Coast. They're pursuing one strategy is to knock out this molecule CCR5, a co-receptor for HIV, and they're having some success, and I believe they have a clinical trial that will be started soon. So that would make cells resistant to infection. Folks, including them and others and us, are using molecules called CARs, or chimeric antigen receptors. Chimeric antigen receptors are modified T cell receptors that have been used in the cancer field and now more recently in the virus field, and particularly HIV, so that you can engineer. The whole goal of this cellular immunotherapy is to take an individual's own cells and engineer them to treat their disease. So in the case of HIV, individual cells would be taken, the T cells may be isolated and engineered to express this CAR, chimeric antigen receptor, that will specifically target virus-infected cells, and these CAR T cells will then target and kill the virus-infected cells.
Well, this is really cool, because let's take just a step back for maybe some of the folks who aren't familiar with this kind of technology. This is where you take T cells, which are a natural part of immunity, and now you're actually arming them with genetic information that allows them to produce some sort of a recognition feature on their surface that now they're able to, they basically have the key and they go out and look for the lock. And the lock is what we are considering to be the protein recognition motifs that are present, say, on a cancer cell or in your case on a virus. Is that pretty much a good explanation of what we're doing
here?
That's
exactly right.
Okay, but you're providing it the genetic information. So a patient would come in and have their own cells, in this case of an autologous donor, would have cells reprogrammed in essence, and then those cells would be put back in.
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah, so this is so cool. But isn't that like a central drawback to this therapy, that you would have to get those cells out of one person and then pump them back in once they're engineered?
Yeah, that's true. That is a limitation of the strategy, but it's also an advantage because then the cells are autologous, or meaning from the self, so that the self will not likely reject them. There are other approaches too. I mean, I mentioned the CAR T cell approach, but there's other folks like Kath Bullard out in Washington, D.C., who's creating T cells, taking patients' individual cells and growing out the virus specific ones with their normal endogenous T cell receptors, and she's got a clinical trial that's just going to start to see about infusing those cells to beef up the immune system. I should also point out, I've got another story that is a tangent to all this where we're headed. If you don't mind, I'll tell you that story.
Oh, sure, please.
So for over a decade ago, Dr. Liz Connick, who's now head of infectious diseases in Arizona, she discovered that during chronic HIV infection, most of the HIV replication or HIV producing cells were most concentrated in this place called lymphoid B cell follicles within secondary lymphoid tissues. And she formed this hypothesis that maybe the virus is concentrating inside this particular location in the body because the virus-specific CD8 T cells don't naturally accumulate there well. And she formed a collaboration with me because I have developed a means to stain virus-specific T cells in tissue. And we worked together and we looked, and sure enough, our data supported her hypothesis in that we found that the virus-specific CD8 T cells tended to be most highly accumulated outside of the follicles and rarely accumulated to high levels inside the follicles. And these data suggest that the lymphoid B cell follicle is somewhat of an immune privilege site in which low levels of virus-specific CD8 T cells permit ongoing viral replication. And this finding led us to hypothesize that maybe we could target virus-specific CD8 T cells to lymphoid B cell follicles, and this could lead to sustained remission of HIV without ART. And so our approach has been moving forward is to, we're working with a person who's developed a very good HIV CAR, Dr. Ed Berger. He's made a really nice CAR, and we're incorporating in this molecule called CXCR5, which induces cells to home to the B cell follicle. So thereby our strategy is, and we think it's the best strategy, because we are not only making engineering cells from an individual to be virus specific, but we're also engineering them to target the particular location in which the virus is most concentrated.
Ah, that's very cool. So you got to excuse the plant guy here for a second. I just want to make sure I got this right. So the when you talk about the secondary lymphoid tissue, this is like lymph nodes and spleen and places like this, right?
That's absolutely right.
Okay. And so you're talking about this kind of tissue, and that the CD8 T cells, these are important cells in this immune response, but they're not quite happening in those tissues, right? They're just not showing up there for some reason in their localization.
Right. And actually, it's within the lymph nodes and spleen, there's a particular location called the follicle where B cells work to make antibodies. And it's in that particular location within the tissues like spleen and lymph nodes where the virus replication is most concentrated.
Okay. And then the T cells, the CD8 T cells are likely just they're not localized there, or they're not getting there for some reason. Probably, I think you said in the beginning, this is one of the reasons why HIV is so insidious, is that it's hiding out in these tissues where these T cells are not, right?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's a correlation between the T cell level and the CD8 T cell level and the presence of it in the level of HIV.
Yes.
Okay, so I just want to make sure we're on the right page. And then this other molecule you mentioned, the CXCR5, so this thing, this is actually almost like a protein motif that targets the cell to that tissue. Is that right?
That's right. So CXCR5 is what's called a chemokine receptor, and chemokine receptors draw cells to a particular chemokine. So in this case, the chemokine CXCL13, which is produced within lymphoid B cell follicles, any lymphocyte like a T cell or B cell that's expressing CXCR5 will be drawn by that gradient of CXCL13 into the follicle.
I get it now. So again, this is just another way of lock and key, where the CXCR5 is now directing the cell to the place where it's needed to solve the problem it needs to solve. So have you seen that your levels of HIV are lower in those follicles where the CXCR5 is being expressed on the T cell?
So, well, we've shown in studies that that levels of virus-specific CD8 T cells in follicular areas is absolutely reduced with lower levels of virus-producing cells in those areas. And we've shown that increasing levels in follicles leads to decreased levels of virus in the blood. And actually another group, Victor Ayala and others out with the NCI, have shown that if you engineer cells from the blood to express CXCR5, that is sufficient when you infuse those cells for them to preferentially home to and accumulate within the lymphoid B cell follicles. And we've subsequently also recently have some preliminary data that we haven't published yet that confirms that.
Wow. It's exciting to hear that there are therapies that are actually suppressing the levels. And very optimistic about. We'll talk about in just a minute when we come back. We're going to take a brief break now. We're speaking with Dr. Pamela Skinner. She's a professor of biomedical science at the Department of Veterinary and Biomedical Sciences at the University of Minnesota. And we're talking about new molecular therapies against HIV. And we'll be back with the Talking Biotech podcast in just a moment.
Tune into the podcast on Saturday, August 17th, 2019. It's the 200th episode of the Talking Biotech Podcast.
Science.
One day after Elvis' death day, more guests sharing their solutions for people and the planet. Gene editing to cure animal disease.
New therapies for cancer and viral disorders.
Next generation crop technologies for sustainable farming. Screaming out of the gate with new technologies in the race to feed 10 billion people.
Hydrogen crops, less resource dependence, fewer pesticides, and more sustainability. Biotechnology.
Countering disinformation that generates fear, uncertainty, and doubt that is impending technology from reaching the industrialized world farmer and the food insecure.
Saturday,
August 17, 2019, the 200th episode of the Talking Biotech Podcast. TalkingBiotechPodcast.com.
TalkingBiotechPodcast.com.
Now we're back on the Talking Biotech Podcast. We're speaking with Dr. Pamela Skinner. She's a professor of biomedical science at the Department of Veterinary and Biomedical Sciences at the University of Minnesota. And we're talking about the new frontiers in molecular therapies that are targeting HIV. And using some of these new methods called CAR cells or CAR T cells, which are immune cells which are being genetically reprogrammed to recognize some sort of problem, in this case, HIV. So what are they using to target HIV, the virus itself? I mean, is there a certain motif that it has as a signature that gets the T cell to recognize it correctly?
Folks who engineer these chimeric antigen receptors or CARs, they will have an extracellular domain that will specifically bind to the virus. And so the very first CAR ever made had a little piece of a protein called CD4 on that extracellular domain. And CD4 is the main molecule that virus targets as a receptor to infect cells. So the part of the CD4 molecule that binds to HIV specifically is used as a targeting motif on the first CAR that was ever made. And subsequently, others have developed other kinds of CARs. For example, folks have engineered CARs where the extracellular motif, instead of having that piece of CD4, has an antibody binding region that will bind to HIV envelope proteins. And a guy named Ed Berger from the NIH, who I've been collaborating with, he's really good at making CARs. And Dr. Berger, his strategy has been, he started with the CD4 motif, and then he added to it an additional motif, a mannose binding lectin piece that specifically binds to the sugar residues on the outside of the virus. And by putting these two motifs together with a little linker, it made the CAR bind better, and the CAR T cells that were produced suppress virus replication much better than the earlier versions of the CAR. So I've been working with Dr. Berger, where we're taking his CAR plus CXCR5 and been engineering cells, and are now hoping that we can get this immunotherapy to the clinic someday soon to test.
So this is a kind of immunotherapy, and is it actually, you mentioned, to the clinics to test, but are these things actually finding their ways into patients as we speak?
It's very cutting edge. So In fact, the very first, CAR T cell therapies have been quite effective in blood cancers, and they're becoming quite popular out in the clinic. But for treating HIV, it's a little bit a newer frontier. But having said that, the very first CAR T cell that was ever tested was in fact directed against HIV, and those studies were with that first CAR that was made with a little piece of CD4, and those studies showed that while they didn't show prolonged viral suppression in the patients who were treated, the study participants, it did show that the treatment was safe and those cells lasted. They could detect them, the half-life being predicted to be about 16 years. And then the newer therapies that are coming along, like I mentioned, Kath Bowler, not with a CAR T cell therapy, but with endogenous T cells she's generated, she's just beginning clinical trials now and recruiting patients. And there's other clinical trials that are in the pipeline that are utilizing some of these newer CARs. So, for example, a CAR that has an antibody on the end is in the pipeline to be tried. And there's other things you can do too. Like you can also make cells resistant to infection by expressing this little peptide from the P41 molecule of the virus. And so folks are combining CARs with that. And so there's lots of exciting new immunotherapies in the pipeline.
Well, I guess when you say you mentioned the endogenous T cell therapies. So are they reprogramming cells in vivo, or what's the story with that one?
So Dr. Bollard and others, what they're doing is they're taking individuals' blood, and then they're growing out. So there exists your natural T cell population, and they're growing out the individual cells that are already specific for the virus, and then they're expanding them into large numbers, and then infusing them back into the individual.
Okay, so that's really cool. There's been some stuff that's been done, as you mentioned, bloodborne cancers, like different leukemias, that have responded extremely well to CAR T therapies. And I think of the two babies in the UK that were treated, they're probably 4 years old now. At the time, they were the first ones to get a kind of a generic cell type where they were using gene editing and, the CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing to eliminate a lot of the immunogenic markers that were present on the outside of the cell to fool the body and resist rejection. Is that something else that people are putting into these types of therapies to have maybe something that's more universally applicable, or we're not even that far yet?
Well, we're not that far for the T cell therapies, but it's certainly something on the horizon to look into. The folks who study another cell type called NK cells, part of the innate immune system, they're being designed with CARs too, to treat cancer, and they're being developed for potentially for HIV as well. And the NK cells, folks have made those universal by eliminating some of those proteins that would get them rejected in cells. And a great advantage to those cells, like you alluded to, is that they're universal. You can take this one product that's produced and use it for everybody. That just really makes it much easier as a therapy to mass produce and broadly distribute.
Yeah, I guess because that would be one of the limitations is the cost of these therapies has to be tremendous. If they were, you know, shown to be extremely successful and ultimately implemented, it seems like getting somebody's blood, engineering their T cells and putting them back in would be expensive. But could you just do it anyway and just have some modicum of rejection, maybe not for kids, but adults, that they would just survive the therapy?
Oh, you mean using somebody else's cells off the shelf?
Yeah. Do you think that that would work to some degree, or is that something that's being avoided?
I don't know of anybody who's pursuing that now. I think for me, I would rather produce a line that had those things that would be rejected reduced first.
Yeah.
There's no reason, and we're actually thinking about using NK cells with CARs and CXCR5 in a universal cell line for that very reason, because they're already off the shelf. The only drawback with the NK cells is, unlike T cells, they're short-lived cells. And so you would probably need to do repeated infusions of the NK cell therapy, whereas the goal with a T cell immunotherapy is these are long-lived cells. And if you can get them infused and for them to take and persist, the goal would be for them to persist for the life of the patient or the study participant and to have, you know, the one treatment be enough to sustain and maintain suppression of and remission of virus for the duration of their life. And so you might think it's expensive, but if it's actually would be much cheaper than lifelong antiretroviral therapy to have one cellular infusion of autologous cells.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. A few months ago, we heard the story of the patient who, after going in for a blood transfusion, or actually had bone marrow eliminated, was given a transfusion. Their donor had a mutation in CCR5 in this co-receptor for HIV. And could you give us a little bit of a background on that and how that relates to the therapies you're discussing?
Sure. So just to be clear, CCR5 is a co-receptor that HIV uses to enter cells. And that's different from CXCR5, the B cell homing molecule that we're discussing earlier. And so, so it's been known for quite a while that some people are just naturally resistant to HIV infection. And it's been discovered that many of these folks have homozygous mutations in the CCR5 co-receptor for HIV. And so knowing this, about a decade ago, a guy named Timothy Brown, who was HIV infected and also had acute myeloid leukemia, went in for treatment. And his doctor was very bright and went out and specifically tried to find donor cells to treat his cancer that were CCR5 homozygous mutated and found one. And so Timothy Brown had a bone marrow transplant, and his replacement cells were resistant to infection. And he then became the first ever person to become cured of HIV. And so that was like about a decade ago. And he, to this day, has not had any detectable virus return. And now there's been a few other folks who have cancer that were similarly treated, and I understand they're doing very well. And so these newly cured patients are also going to start popping up, being heard about soon. But having said that, I mean, that's great. We've cured somebody, but we have to realize that this is really not a therapy for most HIV infected individuals, because this treatment involved a bone marrow transplant, which is inherently extremely risky. And then also it required cells from CCR5 homozygous individuals, which are very rare. So it's truly not practical to expand this cure method broadly to folks who are HIV infected.
Yeah, it is an amazing story, and it shows us a lot about how we understand the genetics of these processes and how disease resistance happens. It's really, really interesting. Just as the virus is mutating to become immune from therapies, there are examples of alleles, or as you mentioned, homozygous people, meaning that both their maternal and the paternal copy of the gene have the mutation, where they can resist the infection. Are there other efforts to find something that targets CCR5, the co-receptor?
Yeah, so I think I mentioned earlier, so there are folks who are actively trying, they're using genetic engineering like zinc finger nucleases and CRISPR-Cas to knock out the CCR5 alleles in individuals to create, to make their own cells resistant to infection. And then there's also folks working on, you know, peptides that inhibit infection. Like I think I mentioned the GP41 peptide, there's one called C34 and one called MC46. So cells that express this peptide are resistant to infection. So there's other ways to get around it. And so it could be, you know, although still bone marrow transplantation is still quite risky, but one could perhaps use autologous cells that are engineered to be resistant in combination with bone marrow transplantation as a cure approach.
Yeah, well, you mentioned all of these different approaches that all have some promise, but, you know, we've learned one thing over the years, that there's no such thing as a silver bullet. But do you think that there's going to be really big breaks when we start to combine the different facets of these different therapies?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think these new therapies are super exciting and have tons of potential, and most of them have not yet made it to the clinic to be tested. And so I think they have lots of potential. I think one drawback with many of these therapies is that, that I've mentioned so far, those that are not targeting the specific location, the B cell follicle, may fail to have sustained effects on viral replication because they're not getting those cells to where the virus replication is most concentrated. However, having said that, well, I think so. I'm hopeful that everybody will start doing that and will work with us doing it. or just do it. We'll be happy if we see somebody else use these ideas and cure HIV too. But also the idea of combining these strategies. So, for example, combining CAR plus CXCR5 immunotherapy with a strategy that's also inducing CCR5 knockout alleles could have a dual effect, and combining those therapies could be better than either therapy alone. So there's a lot of ideas in the works to you know, first just get these ideas tested and then possibly combine them.
I guess, you know, we talk about therapies and all the good things that can possibly happen. Are there any predicted downsides of this, or is it because of their specificity that it would make us at least hypothesize that there would be no immediate collateral threat?
Well, so far they're all showing to be pretty safe. I would say that in the cancer field, when you have CARs that have an antibody based binding motif, the one risk is that antibodies sometimes bind off target things. So like the first, I forget what it was an anti-CD20 antibodies to bind B cells were used for the first CARs. And they thought that those were only expressed on CD20 only on B cells. But then when they went to clinic, they had patients die, they discovered that, this protein's also expressed at low levels in the lung. And so you can get this off-target effect of the CAR T cells killing important cells that you need to live. Having said that, though, the CARs that we're talking about now and using for our approach are exquisitely specific for HIV. They're shown to not bind to anything else, and so there's we've done some preliminary studies to show that they are safe. So that problem shouldn't be too much of an issue. They might be, and certainly they're going to be evaluated for the antibody based CARs that are being pursued. Another drawback that might happen with these CAR T cells is that like especially one that's an antibody based, is that antibody is foreign to the cell, so that part of the CAR might be recognized by the a person's immune system, and then the immune system will clear those cells, thereby permitting the cellular immunotherapy to be only delivered once, and if it was delivered again, the immune system would just clear those cells and they wouldn't be very effective. But so Ed Berger, he's really thought a lot about this. And so the CARs that he's produced, as I mentioned, he's got like the little CD4 piece and then this piece of MBL. These are both endogenous proteins. So they're self. They're not, they won't be viewed by the immune system as foreign. However, the, where they're linked together might possibly. So in our studies, that's one thing we're going to be evaluating is whether there's a potential for these molecules to be recognized by the immune system and then ultimately rejected.
No, I never thought about that. No, that's a good point. And I guess I have to ask you to get out your crystal ball. If you were even so brave as to, you know, lob a guess here, I mean, maybe even first thing you could answer is, you know, when you were moving through your, you know, graduate career and postdoc time and even time as a researcher, did you think you would be doing this, say even 5 or 10 years ago?
Not necessarily, no. I'm super excited that this is where we ended up. I mean, one why I think I have perhaps the best job in the world is that I get to go out and make discoveries and then follow those discoveries up where they lead us. And this is where we ended up. So we are super stoked to be here. But honestly, I wouldn't have predicted when I was a postdoc that this is where we would be today.
I don't think any of us would. I always have to ask that though, because it seems like your field is moving so fast and there's at least some support from NIH and other agencies to promote some of the clinical trials and some of the research for the cures. And, you know, with that as a backdrop, do you think that we'll have a cure sometime in the next decade, or is that too much of a hazard to guess?
So when we talked about, remember earlier, we talked about a sterilizing cure where we actually remove every infected cell. I think that's a very difficult one to conquer. And I do not think that we will have that accomplished in the next decade. However, I really think that these immunotherapies and other approaches that are in the pipeline right now could very well lead to sustained remission of HIV, and which infected individuals can get off their antiretroviral therapy drugs and have their own immune system control infection for the duration of their life.
Well, very good. Thank you so much for joining me today. That's a great place to go out. If people wanted to learn more about what you do or maybe find you on a website, where would they look?
Well, if they just Googled Pam Skinner and the University of Minnesota, they'll find some websites that I'm linked with.
That's great. And so what I'll do is I'll just add your URLs to the website that accompanies the episode. Well, Dr. Pam Skinner, thank you so much for joining me. This has been a lot of fun to learn about the new therapies for HIV, which would be amazing if we could bring them to fruition. And I hope it comes from your lab.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech podcast. As always, write a review on iTunes and all that good stuff as we head towards our 1,000,000th download and 200th episode coming up in the next few weeks. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech podcast. Send your suggestions for guests, comments, or questions to talkingbiotech@gmail.com. Please write a review of this podcast on iTunes and recommend it to a friend. More downloads help us reach a wider audience with science.